Weekend Breakfast
with Alison Curtis.
Playing the music you love.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Today FM. Welcome back to Weekend Breakfast. Alison Curtis with you. Today FM, as promised. And David Williams has joined me. How are you?
I'm good. Lovely to hear your voice.
I can't remember the last time you were on the show. And I was trying to remember of your 30 billion books what we were talking about.
It was in 1982, and I was talking about the release of my new album. I don't know, actually. I mean, that's the thing, when you've released so many books, it does get a little, it gets a little hard to talking to people about them, just because they go, what number is this?
Is this 35? No.
I think it might be 41, but oh, I've lost count. But look, in my defense, Enid Blyton, I think, wrote about 200 books. I'm not comparing myself. Michael Morpurgo wrote Wars, has written over 200 books, and so many that no one actually knows for sure how many he's written, including himself. And well, I'm not comparing myself to like Agatha Christie either, but there was about 100 books. So, you know, some writers are prolific.
Yes, they very much so. So I was looking back on your titles and I'm like, was that 4 books last year? Like, that's incredible. I think that's amazing.
Probably, but they're different types of books. So yeah. I normally bring out a novella, which is sort of for younger kids, which was Robodog. And then there was a book of short stories, which was The World's Worst Monsters. And then I had a novel in The Blunders and a picture book in Little Monsters Rule. So yes, oh God, non-name checks, but I was just checking I could actually remember.
Oh, you're testing
but yeah,
yourself.
That is a lot, but they're different kind of audiences, and also I just love doing it, and I don't know, I mean,
so you managed to find the time to do it. That's what I think is amazing.
Well, I do. I could work well to deadlines. I like working hard. I mean bank holiday yesterday I was writing an episode of Gangster Granny animation series, so I'm driven, and I put in the hours, but then again, it's something I really enjoy doing. So I'm lucky I have a job that I love doing. So it doesn't feel like work in the way that it might if I was doing something I didn't love.
Yes. Well, you're still one of the most popular, if not the most popular author for our little reader slot that we do on Weekend Breakfast, where we ask people to come on air, little kids, and read books. You're usually 9 out of 10 kids choose to read one of yours, which is brilliant.
Well, that's
still, that's stayed consistent. So Astro Chimp is the one that we're looking at this time. And I have to say, the thing that cracked me up the most, it's literally in page 4 or 5 where you're introducing people. So I was like, I don't know why the name Dimitri made me laugh. I don't know why. It's like, where did he call
it's a real
Dimitri?
Name. It's a real name. Well, I had a lot of fun creating these characters because they're based on the real animals that went into space. And Dimitri the dog is based a bit on Laika, the very Russian dog that was sent into space and sort of became a hero. And so I sort of thought about I did some research because I didn't know all the facts, but I did some research into, you know, all these animals, easy to find, and sort of created my own characters out of them. But it was interesting to learn that the fruit flies were the first creatures from Earth sent into space in 1948, which I had no idea. And in fact, I've been going around, you know, talking about my book in various schools and even in South Africa, and it was interesting that pretty much no one guessed the fruit flies. Everyone thought it was a dog or a monkey. So I created these characters, and I sort of wanted them to have a sort of Star Wars type adventure base. So it's like they're my characters. It's in the future. They're still up there, and they've sort of all taken on different roles. And they're all sort of battling each other, and then they have to come together because this huge threat is threatening the Earth. And they feel ambivalent about the Earth because some of the animals were abandoned up there. So there's a kind of interesting thing about whether they want to save the Earth, and whether some of the animals can convince the others to save it.
Well, it's always a good excuse when I'm talking to you, because my daughter still is not like the best reader as in choosing to read.
How old is she?
Well, she's 13 now, but this was a perfect thing because I was like, I'm talking to him. I lied. I was like last week. I was like, the interview is tomorrow. I'm under so much stress. Can you read it for me and tell me what it's about? And she loved it. And she's
good.
They put a dog in space, and then it able to open up that conversation where it was, as I said, it was based on actual events. So we were able to have those conversations as well. But her favorite page was the other things that space pirates, dog
Those
pirates
dog
do.
pirates do, yeah. Have fun with those kind of things. I mean, I just try and jam pack it with jokes. And how I see what I do is I feel like I'm trying to encourage reluctant readers to read and getting them on the journey to reading and creating books that are hopefully, in the main, just kind of great fun for them to read. I mean, sometimes I do take on some bigger themes in the novels, but as this was a comic book adventure, I felt it could be a fun piece of entertainment, and it's very visual because it's like a novel. So Adam Stoer, actually, the illustrator, actually had all the hard work, really. He was working day. Poor man was working day and night, 7 days a week for about 3 months on it because it was so heavy on illustration, but it's turned out brilliantly.
It's funny you should say that, because I was like, even like, I know this is radio, but we might have a video up the, you know, the fruit flies. I was like, God, that page alone would have taken him a really, I was thinking of him going, would have taken him a long time.
The detail in it is brilliant. But that's one of the things about, writing a book is that the words are just really a small part of it because the design and the illustration and everything, that's what makes a book a
But you
brilliant
decided to
object.
do Yeah, you decided to do a comic book though style. And I think that's important for people to say, because honestly, and I've mentioned like Heartstopper so many times, that's the gateway book to got my daughter into reading
Yeah,
a couple of years
I
ago.
love Heartstopper. It's the work of genius, isn't it?
And it's just, I think this is worth saying that it is that. So if you do have those reluctant readers, of which we have listening, that they'll go, oh, that could be the way in, and then they've got your whole back catalog to discover.
I mean, I didn't quite think of it that cynically. Like, they might buy the other books, but I did
Sorry.
think but actually, now you say it, I think people should. No, it's a different form, isn't it? And over time, when I was growing up, I think, sort of, I mean, I started off reading the Beano, and then I moved on to sort of Batman comics and things. And I think at the time, people thought of those things as a, well, Batman, now graphic novels and comics are seen as an art form, aren't they? But they weren't when I was growing up. So I think more and more this is accepted. And Heartstopper is a huge, that book has become a huge like literary event, hasn't it, when the new one is published. So it's possible. But I just hope kids have good fun reading this and want to pick up another book, whether it's mine or someone else's. I'm just happy if they want to read something else.
And then, David, I suppose one of the things, and I didn't realize, actually, I only just read this, that Awful Auntie was turned into a theater production. Like, how is it for you to kind of see your work on different formats? Like, obviously, television, film, and then theater. We went to see theater production of Gangster Granny. Like, that must be, you mustn't tire of the thrill of that. Like, that's pretty special.
No, I tell you what's amazing. You feel like a magician when you're watching a theatre production. It's like what was in your head, because when I try and think of stories, I visualize them. When it's a theatre production, it's like it's sort of my dream. Obviously, other people have done it. I mean, amazing work, the actors, the design, director, everything. But it's still ultimately for my characters, my story. I'm sort of projected, onto this stage, and then all these families and stuff are watching the show, and it is quite a surreal thing because I'm used to being in the show. I used to write, when me and Matt were writing shows, it was like we were writing just to an end for us to perform things, so the writing was just part of the process. But this is different, like, so I'm getting experience of it that I'd never really had before. And when yourself are in it, say I'm in a television adaptation, something I've written on television, I'm constantly just distracted by thinking, oh, hang on, what do I look right here? Do I look fat? Or just going, oh, I remember that day it rained all day or whatever. But this is something different, and it's really magic. And it was one of the best nights I ever had in theatre. Was The Boy in the Dress was turned into a musical by the Shakespeare Company. Robbie Williams did the songs. It was really superb. And the first time I saw it, the first preview, it was very emotional because I think the songs added a whole nother emotional dimension that wasn't in the book. I had the emotion, but this a powerful emotional song kind of beats anything, really. And right at the end, the lights went down and the whole audience were, rapturous and appreciation, and stood up, and I was like, oh my God, I felt like I was floating. It was the most extraordinary thing. So yeah, I'm very lucky that there's been so many different incarnations of the books, and even I'm happy when it's Tupperware.
Yeah.
I actually thought I've made it when I had Tupperware. Some Tupperware arrived, and I just thought, that's it. I can put sandwiches in this now.
That's brilliant.
I just never thought it would be Tupperware.
I'm
You
gonna
know?
go as soon as we're done. I'm Googling your Tupperware because I have
David
not
Williams
seen it.
Tupperware.
I haven't
It's
seen
the,
it.
you know what? It's the best Tupperware money can buy. No, but it's just kind of surreal. You go, well, how did something I create end up on some Tupperware? But as a kid, I loved, you know, when you go, the cereals don't have it so much now, but cereals had like tie-ins with movies and stuff like that. And I remember the excitement of going, Mom, look, it's all Superman Weetabix. And he goes, you don't like Weetabix. I don't know, but I want the cards. Well, you're going to have to eat all the Weetabix before we go.
Did you?
Making my way through Weetabix from hating it just so I could have a sticker or a
Did you
transfer.
have? Do you know, speaking of cereals as a sidebar, do you remember? I was only talking about this recently. I don't know if you guys had it in the UK, in Canada, North America. We had the C3PO cereal. Do you remember
Oh yeah,
that?
well, no, I have seen it and I'm very jealous because it didn't, I don't think it ever came out in the UK,
It was
but I
pretty
would
gross.
love C3PO. It was gross, doesn't matter because it tasted of Star Wars.
And you just like it was in your teeth for the day. You're like, I can't get rid of this stuff.
It doesn't matter. I still want one. I still want a box of it. I'm
Oh my
quite obsessed
God.
with Star Wars.
Oh, do you know, you said something recently I loved as well. Stories encourage young people to believe in change. And I think that, you know, obviously throughout the years, there's been so much reimaging of stories, and parents are, you know, reading, you know, the stories at night, kind of going, oh, I'm just going to admit that little bit. Like, we have evolved as a human race. So it's interesting to think that, you know, we're bringing our current climate into writing and things like that. And I know you've discussed that in a lot of your themes in your books as well. But I do, the importance of reading basically is my question. It's just so huge, isn't it? And we really
Yeah, I
need to
think
keep
it
it
goes
going.
beyond. People often think, oh, it's about learning to read. But it's just a tiny part of it. It's a tiny part of it. Obviously, you know, it's important, especially when kids are young. But the thing is about stories, we learn so much from stories in whichever way we consume them. And the thing is, I mean, I watch Marvel movies with my son and I really enjoy them. But in Marvel movies, things are resolved through violence. That's how change comes. As people beat each other up, it's entertaining. It has a place. I enjoy them, but you know, there's got to be different ways to achieve change, and there's got to be more interesting ways to tell that story. And it, you know, children are incredibly switched on. It's children that are leading the argument about the environment, isn't it? It's children or young people who often have the most radical ideas and are sort of demanding change, and so. I think that probably starts when you're younger with stories because stories very rarely, and especially if they're interesting stories, very rarely can end up exactly where they started. Something, people change, you know, and that's something that also people don't quite think about enough. They think of the world changing, but we all change, don't we? We all develop, we all grow, we change our opinions about things. And so I think even subconsciously, I think stories encourage change, form another,
Absolutely.
even in tiny ways.
Absolutely. And, you know, as parents, we might favor certain things when we're reading our kids because we're like, they'll get something from this, but everything they'll learn something from. And it's just important to read with them. You mentioned Matt. I know we're not on to talk about that, but you are working together again. That's
Yes,
all you're
we're.
going to say.
No, you didn't ask a question. I just said, yes, we are. We're working on a new show, like a multi-character show, and it's a lot of fun because I love writing the books, but it's solitary. But I started off my writing career in the main writing with Matt, and obviously it's different because we're acting out the characters, we're trying to make each other laugh, we're improvising, and so what's on the page is a sort of reflection of us. You know, of our sort of laughter together. So I feel like if one of us is laughing, it might work. And if both of us, if no one's laughing, it's not going to work. If one of us is laughing, it might work. And if both of us are laughing, then chances are it will work and make other people laugh. So it's been a really fun process.
And it's nice too because talking about change, you both have changed since you know, worked together before and you're coming back
I
now
haven't.
again. He's grown as a human
He's got a
being.
lot thinner. He's got a lot thinner. I've got a tiny bit fatter. No, of course. I mean, the world's changed, and it's like,
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
evolved.
who wouldn't want to change? I mean, there's often that thing, isn't it? Never change, never change. It's like, well, actually,
Maybe.
quite interesting to adapt and change and change your opinions about things. I mean, who has the same opinions they did, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, or something?
Exactly.
I think back at school and the things that I thought, and just think, oh God, I was completely ignorant about the world. And so those things are exciting. And we've got a whole new raft of characters. I mean, I still think people, I don't think we've lost our sense of humor, and we still like things that can be sort of a bit shocking in some ways. I mean, shock is part of humor. Humor is surprise often, and like saying the unsayable and all that kind of stuff. So it's still that. But I know there's sort of greater sensitivities about things, and that's something that you want to navigate, that you sort of have to navigate. But that's okay. That's just, and it will be different in another 10 years. I mean, if you go back 40 years, things were different, weren't they? I mean, I grew up watching Carry On films, and I didn't watch Benny Hill that much, but obviously that's the sort of touchstone, isn't it, for like how things would change. I grew up watching the Two Ronnies and stuff like that. But yeah, there's it it's constantly evolved. But I do think the past is interesting, and I think that if we erase the past or the bits of the past we don't like, I think it's like we just won't learn anything. Because,
I
and it's
know.
sort of dangerous. It's sort of weird, and I think we'll just go mad because it could never stop.
It can make us uncomfortable for sure, but it's
Yeah,
okay to sit with
but
that.
it's interesting. It's interesting because it's jarring, and you realize, when you come across something that is very much of its time, definitely the door is closed on that type of comment, behavior, whatever. It's very jarring, and it makes you realize how far we've come, and that always feels like a good thing to me.
I don't know if it's, and I'll just make this brief, but I don't know if I'll articulate this well, but I found that anything when I talked to my daughter when she was younger about explaining, say, homophobia or transphobia, racism, sexism, because it's so not in their world, you're like, am I doing more damage explaining them to it to her that it's actually a thing? Because she's like, what do you mean? I don't understand how people couldn't like somebody based on this. Like, just she didn't get it. And
Well, the world
that's,
has changed, luckily. I mean, when I was at school, it was a very homophobic environment. But my son, I've got lots of gay friends who are married, and so for him, it's just, I don't think it would even occur to him because he doesn't see it as anything unusual. But the world was so different. My best friend is gay. I was at school with Robin, and we were talking about Baden Powell, who started the Scout movement, and he was accused of being homophobic. And Robin, my friend who's gay, made a really good point. He says, what you've got to remember is the word homophobic didn't exist then, because it was completely normal to be to have negative views about homosexuality, because it was illegal. And so there can be a danger of not understanding things in their context, and
Their
expecting
origin.
perhaps, yeah, that everyone's views in the past would be the same as now. I kind of think, well, it's impossible. And we don't realize that it's 2024, but we're about 2034 or 2044. There'll be things perhaps even in this conversation we'll go, oh, I can't believe we said that. It's the strangest thing. It's the strangest
is.
thing. I think it's accelerated, hasn't it? It feels like it's accelerated.
I think it has. And it's a good thing to try and keep up, but it's a good thing to check in and kind of analyze things. I always say that I will do what's asked of me, and I'm not in a position that a lot of other people are in living a certain experience. So whatever you tell me to say
No.
or refer to as or whatever, I will do because that is
Yeah,
fair.
and it's listening, isn't it? Because especially me, a white middle-aged man, I mean, I really need to listen because I haven't walked in people's shoes. I don't know what they've been through. And so if you get something wrong, then it's time to listen. I mean, you make comedy to make people happy. And if you've made someone unhappy, it's very uncomfortable because there's a whole reason you want to be to make people happy. So,
Well, I
it's
think.
a good thing. You listen, and you try and understand, you try and resonate with you, and you try and think there's a better way of doing things. And that's what
Definitely.
we've done all along. But I mean, it's interesting. Like you think 10 years is recent, but it isn't in terms of cultural change. I mean, it's huge. There's been huge changes in the last 10 years, last 15 years, last
In
20 years.
Ireland in particular has gone through such change, but this is we've gone off in a different direction
Well,
as I
it's I
expected,
don't
as I
know. It's not
expected.
this. It's an interesting. We're having an interesting
We are
conversation,
most definitely.
which is actually kind of, I don't know. I enjoy it more than gassing on about myself and my career.
Well, I appreciate your time as always, and we look forward to seeing what you and Matt do, of course. And I cannot recommend this book enough, and I love it so much, Astro Chimp. It's just the illustrations, the story, everything. You know what, David? It seems to me, and I hope this comes out right, but you do something that is obviously a good idea, but you got to the idea when other people wouldn't. I was like, this is just a good idea. This is just a good idea for a story, and you
Well,
got to it.
I think that's well, I think yeah, it's having a good idea and then putting it into action. And when people stop me in the park and say, "Oh, I've got an idea for a children's story," and I say, "Well, you've got to do it then. You've got to write it." And they look at me a bit blankly, as if like, oh, "I didn't know I had to actually write it down." They go, "No, that's how. That if you put
Works.
your idea into action, that's when it becomes real."
Yeah.
Um,
I really
so, so
appreciate
yeah.
your time as always. Thank you so much. And
Thank
hopefully
you
we
so
chat
much.
again.
Yeah,
Thank
I
you so much,
think we
David.
should. Same time tomorrow.
Thank you, David. Take care.
Okay, take
Bye.
care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Weekend Breakfast with Alison Curtis. Playing the music you love.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Today.